I'm Massimo Bottura.
This is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Huni Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stein.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs.
It is so much work just to make, you know, the smallest dent, and the amount of people and the amount of energy it takes is just incredible. I feel like we're already on this uphill battle, you know, putting our heads down, trying to do it. And then you wake up and read that, and it literally knocked the air out of me, because we have this group of 80 people that Zooms every single day, and you feel like you're on the same page and you're working towards, you know, an outcome. It definitely felt like getting pushed back down the hill.
The date is April 21st, 2020. And that is Caroline Glover, chef and owner of Annette Restaurant in Aurora, Colorado. Our guest on this special report of Andrew Talks to Chefs. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is a special report of Andrew Talks to Chefs. I am your host, Andrew Friedman. As always, our great thanks to Sam Pellegrino for covering the production costs of these special reports. We wouldn't have been able to deliver them to you without them. This is going to be a fairly short introduction on a crazy busy morning today, but I'm delighted to bring you this interview. I had never even traded direct messages, or I don't even think I was following until the other day, Chef Caroline Glover, who is the chef owner of Annette Restaurant in Aurora, Colorado. Annette is described by its own website as a wood-fired shared plate restaurant. Caroline's been on quite the upswing over the last 4 years or so since she opened the restaurant. She was a Food & Wine Best New Chef in 2019. She was a semi-finalist for the Beard Awards this year. That process is in limbo at the moment. We don't have the finalist list, and we're not sure when the awards will be. The restaurant, of course, as so many are around the country, is not currently welcoming guests into the dining room. It is operating a curbside pickup service as an option 5 nights a week. And Caroline wrote I don't know if we'd call it an op-ed or an article or an open letter, but last week when the President's Economic Council for Restaurants was announced, there was, as I'm sure everybody listening to this knows, quite an uproar. A lot of people were very upset at the lack of representation on the council, both from a cultural and gender standpoint, and also from a type of restaurant standpoint. It seemed to only exist at the extreme ends of the dining spectrum. And Caroline wrote a piece on CNN.com, that's where it was published, expressing, I think, very well what a lot of people were feeling. And it really caught my attention, and I wanted to reach out to her, which I did. I just DM'd her on Instagram. She was very responsive. We set up a time to talk, which was just yesterday on the 20th of April. And I really was struck by our conversation. I found her to be, especially talking to someone she'd never met, had never seen. We didn't do a Zoom call. This was just over a website I use for recording remote interviews. We fell right into a very natural conversation, and I think you're going to enjoy hearing her talk, not just about that letter and about the council, that's actually a very small part of this conversation, but giving the point of view of a type of restaurateur and chef that's been very much on my mind during this crisis, which is a young restaurateur with their first place that's only in its first few years of business. She opened Annette in 2016. Who is I think, you know, extremely vulnerable at this point. This is the type of restaurant that, you know, is in great peril right now. And she speaks very openly about all that, which I really appreciated. So that's all I think I need to say about it to orient you. Here it is, my conversation with Caroline Glover. I have to be honest, I've never been to Aurora, Colorado. I looked at it on the map. It says you're only 10 miles from Denver proper. But can you give me a sense of kind of your setting there and where you operate and just maybe tell us just a little bit about your restaurant?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are very close to the Denver border in Aurora, just across it, basically. So we kind of straddle the city of Aurora, and then there's a neighborhood called Stapleton, which is in Denver. So we basically sit on this line between the two. And I am located in a really fairly large marketplace that opened when we opened Annette. So just about 4 years ago, and it's an old aviation factory. So we are on kind of the outside of that. There's a lot of indoor open air type of market type places. And then we have our own entrance, and we're about 1500 square feet, just situated on the east side of the building. So we are a part of the marketplace, but we kind of have our own little nest sanctuary. But surrounding us, we have this pretty well off neighborhood, Stapleton on one side. And then the other side, I guess I look directly at a junkyard. There's a U-Haul to the left of us, and it's a pretty stark contrast between two communities that we're in the middle of.
I look at a restaurant like yours, I look at a chef like you, I look at this moment we're in, and I mean, certainly people have it, it's all relative, right? There are people, I mean, at the extreme end, there are people who have lost their lives in this situation, there are people who've lost their businesses already. You, as I understand it from your website and from the little bit of communication we had, are doing, I guess we'd call it curbside pickup. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, I look at, you know, you're about 4 years into having your first restaurant. You were a Food and Wine Best New Chef. You're on the semifinalist list for the Beards, which is a process that's just kind of in suspended animation right now. You know, you've had to, as I understand it, let your hourly people go, but have managed to keep your salaried people on staff. You know, an independent restaurant of a modest size at this moment just seems so, to me, really precarious. And I'm just wondering if you could just speak to that reality right now and what it's been like to kind of ride out the emotions of it.
Yeah, I think you know, obviously no restaurant opens and foresees this happening. So, you know, I've had a lot of emotions throughout this whole process. You know, it's only been 6 weeks, but it feels, my God, it feels longer than 6 weeks. And I've kind of had this realization. So we're a super small restaurant. My husband and I work there every single day. And that's how it was before this pandemic happened too. We had just gotten to the point where we had a day and a half off, you know, being almost 3.5 years in, and that was a huge accomplishment. And now we're back to, you know, every single day. But I've been thinking about kind of what our position is compared to other restaurants. Obviously, I can't really compare myself to other restaurants because I don't know, you know, what everybody else is doing financially, but I think, yes, we are in a very precarious position because we are so small and our overhead, you know, everything is accounted for. We don't have extra cash for anything. But both of us being involved in the day-to-day operations since day one, and then, you know, going into this, it hasn't been that big of a change for us. I feel really, really lucky that we haven't removed ourselves at all from the operations. You know, I still cook on the line 5 nights a week. And now I'm doing that again, 5 nights a week. So I feel like we are really in a good position just based on how involved we were with the day-to-day operations. And same with my staff. All my salary guys that are on right now that we kept on have been with me since day one. Which is,
wow,
it's pretty,
that's amazing.
Insane.
That goes against the grain of pretty much everyone's experience.
Totally. And I mean, we've done things differently. You know, we share tips with every single person in the restaurant, front and back of the house. So we've kind of done things a little bit differently since day one. And I feel like it has created a really crazy strong family bond because people have been paid a little bit more than they normally would back of the house wise. So, you know, my dishwasher that's on salary now with us has been with me since day one. So I feel like we are in a good position because of those factors, you know, having these people open the restaurant with me. And it's obviously a pandemic is 100 times harder, but it's kind of the same emotional roller coaster of when you're just getting started. So it feels like we're starting a whole new restaurant right now.
You know, I look at your website and this statement, which is in the first person, it comes from you. I created Annette for three simple reasons. I mean, this kind of broke my heart a little, never even having spoken to you before. We've probably exchanged, you know, maybe a total of 60 words over the weekend to set up this interview. But, you know, I want to just read this. You have a, it's set out as a mission statement. It says mission. I created Annette for three simple reasons: to serve diners as though they were guests in my home, to make a place where people can share food and tell stories they'll remember, and to prepare scratch-to-table and wood-fired fare that honors food producers, nourishes eaters, and embodies craftsmanship, creativity, and rustic simplicity. I've cooked all over the country, and that experience informs what you'll find at Annette. And then you go on a little bit to talk about how you cook at home and what you want from the guest, which is basically to be your guest, to sit, drink, and eat, and be my guest. You know, I read that, and I think about, yes, you are still cooking, and yes, you all are still serving people, but so much of that mission is about the magic of restaurants, right? It's about the energy of the dining room. It's about the exchange of the connection between, you know, cooks, chef, servers, guests. How much of your own satisfaction in cooking is diminished by people not physically being in your space?
Immensely. I feel like, so, you know, the first 4 weeks that we started doing this, I think I was numb, you know, it was turn our restaurant upside down, do whatever we have to do. And I feel like in this past week, you know, people have jokingly, you know, friends of mine that have fast casual spots and have always, you know, kind of poo-pooed the full service restaurant model, saying, you know, it's not sustainable, it's archaic, it's dying, come up to me and say, okay, are you sold on this, you know, takeout curbside type, you know, cuisine that you're doing right now? And I'm not satisfied by it. I'm absolutely elated that we are being supported the way we have been and that we're able to keep doing this and pay our employees and provide health insurance. And there's all of that. But my heart, I'm going to try not to cry, but my heart is not into it. It's survival mode right now. And I know we have a really long road. I know that I don't know what dining is going to look like for the immediate future. And I don't think we're close to being out of this. I think we're a year, year and a half. And so right now I'm trying to sit with my thoughts and with my heart and decide what do I need to do to still feel satisfied? Because I miss my guests. We have a super open kitchen. The guests have become my family, a lot of them. And I get emails from them or text messages of them eating their meals. But there's a large part of what I love about Annette that's gone now.
I'm sorry. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say something that was going to...
No. But it's a real, you know, it's a real question. And I think a lot of people are, you know, easily pivoting to more of a fast casual model. And I get it. We're adaptable and we're scrappy and I'll do it. But being in the restaurant every day and that being my home too, you know, my husband and I have two dogs, but that's it. The guests and the employees are my family. We pivoted very quickly, and I'm grateful for that, but I think long term, I want to make sure that our heart is in it and that we're doing something we're proud of, and it fills, you know, the hole right now that's missing. It's a huge void.
Let's talk about this letter, or not letter. Well, maybe it's a letter. The article essay that you wrote for CNN. You know, this panel was announced. I can't even remember all the notes I make before an interview. I didn't think I'd have to write that down, but my sense of time is so ruined that, I mean, I know it was sometime last week, I guess. and you wrote this piece, and a lot, there was a huge outcry, right? I mean, you're not alone in your sentiments. A lot of people were very upset about two things. One is that it seemed to be a panel that only existed at the extremes of the pendulum swing. You know, it was either the fast food chain restaurants or super high end, you know, fine dining, super celebrity owner chefs. And then, you know, it was just a very non-representative council. But you took the time and went to the trouble to put it into words and to put it out there, which I think is always a brave thing to do. I wonder if you could just speak. Well, my first question is to you, because I think for so many of us who cover or are in your industry, it's so self-evident at this point. But for anyone listening for whom it isn't, why is it important for a council like that to be more representative? How does that affect things where the rubber meets the road?
I was talking to my friend Brandon, who is also one of the best new chefs, and he's in LA today. And, you know, he put it so well. There has to be representation for the immigrants, for the people, or even, you know, like me, who's doing a very small operation. What helps the big guys doesn't necessarily help the small guys. And so I know everybody's feeling their way through this. Obviously, this has never happened, but I think to overlook really almost every other person that makes up this culinary fabric, which is so diverse and interwoven and includes far more than just big, you know, restaurants with a lot of backing. You know, we're definitely scared of being missed or missing out or having, you know, some plan put into place that doesn't make sense for, a majority of us. So to me, it was just really important to, and I'm not, obviously not the only person. I think a lot of people cried out, but, we need to be careful. This is a really delicate time. There's a lot of infrastructure. There's so many restaurants. There's so many people who depend on restaurants that if we don't make the right decisions, a lot of the hospitality industry is going to vanish. And I think it's important that people realize that it's not only these big restaurants that make up it. It's the little ones.
It's been really interesting to speak to people both on the air and also in private. I can't say who it was. It was just a personal conversation, but I just spoke to a veteran restaurateur before you and I spoke. And, you know, he had just come off a phone call, you know, one of these ad hoc groups, you know, in a major city that's trying to figure out how they're going to get heard, right? And this has been going on now for weeks. There is this feeling that I really feel almost in a palpable way, from the industry that all of these, all this pleading is sort of falling on deaf ears when it comes to policymakers, lawmakers. Is that the feeling you have? And I mean, my sense is that for a huge majority of people, that was like the pre-existing emotional condition. And then that list came out and it was just like a gut punch. I mean, is that accurate?
I think that's accurate. You know, I think I'm on the committee of the Independent Restaurant Coalition, and I think they are doing an incredible job trying to make waves, try to get in front of the right people. But it is so much work just to make, you know, the smallest dent, and the amount of people and the amount of energy it takes is just incredible. And so, you know, I feel like we're already on this uphill battle, you know, putting our heads down, trying to do it. And then you wake up and read that, and it literally knocked the air out of me. just seeing, oh my gosh, whoa, okay. Because we have this group of 80 people that Zooms every single day, and you feel like you're on the same page and you're working towards, you know, an outcome, and then it may be for nothing. I don't think that's true. I think that a lot of things are being done and are trying to be done. But it definitely felt like getting pushed back down the hill.
Have you gotten any, what kind of, I shouldn't say have you gotten any, of course you have, but what kind of feedback have you gotten, and has most of it been positive? Have you gotten any pushback on that piece?
Yeah. Yes to both. So I definitely, I would say the majority, like overwhelming majority, has been really good feedback. And a lot of my friends, a lot of women, a lot of people of color just saying thank you for, you know, putting that into words, how you were feeling, and you know, putting it out there on a platform. I did get, I think, a couple of emails. All three of them, or all two of them, said that I was ageist, racist, and sexist, which is the first time I've been called any of those things.
Right.
But to me, I just feel like the people who were not happy with it, who happened to be, you know, men, felt like I was just calling out the men. And I felt like they missed the message. You know, I'm not saying that Thomas Keller shouldn't be on this panel. I'm not saying that Wolfgang Puck shouldn't be on this panel. They're pioneers. You know, they have helped create the fabric of the culinary world for sure. But there needs to be other people involved. And I think, you know, I was telling my husband, when I get asked to do things, I'm always really careful to say who else is involved. Because it's really important to me that if I'm doing an event with somebody who doesn't have a good reputation with their employees, or they have some, you know, that they're not fair, or have some sort of, you know, skeleton in their closet, it's really important that I don't put my name with them. And so to me, I felt like those men should have said, who else is on this panel? Oh, I don't feel like, you know, everybody's being fully represented. Can we bring this person on, or something like that? So, you know, I think that those men are great and great at what they do, but, I think that there should have been a little bit more question looking around saying, hey, we're missing something here.
I love that question that you ask. It's something that it took me to a much later age than you to ask that question about any group situation, because it can create a mess that you can't really get out of once you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think at first I was afraid too, because I didn't want it to come off like, oh, I'll only do it if so-and-so is involved. But, you know, in a world where, you know, not everybody does the right thing, especially in the hospitality world, you know, coming to light most recently, but it's been going on for a long time. I think it's more and more important just to make sure that, you know, you're not being affiliated or, you know, seemingly representing or supporting somebody that you don't even know. So that was hard for me to start doing, but once I started doing it, it made sense.
You've actually been more, I think, clear-eyed about it than a lot of people I've spoken to. You know, I feel like the hardest thing about, if there's one common thing for everybody in the industry I've talked to, it is and I don't think they blame anyone for this, but it is the frustration with the unknowable timeframe. You know, you mentioned that a minute ago, that you think it's going to be longer than people are acknowledging. Do you have a sense in your head? I mean, just let's say just for you locally, do you have a sense of what that might look like in terms of when, even at a reduced capacity or a, you know, a mandated limitation, when you might have people back in your restaurant?
Yeah, that's it's a good question, because it's something that we've really been discussing a lot lately. Last week I was on a phone call with a liaison with our governor and the health department, and they were kind of laying out what a rollout of reopening would look like. And, you know, it looks like 50% less capacity, taking temperatures at the door, servers wearing gloves and masks, kitchen wearing gloves and masks, disposable plateware and cutlery and plastic glasses. And after, you know, kind of hearing all of this and testing not still being available, my husband and I sat down and had a conversation, and I don't feel like it's worth it to open the doors at this moment. We are doing 50% less in sales as it is with takeout, and we've created this like pretty intense quarantine with the six people who are working with us. And I mean, it's no grocery store, you know, you buy all your groceries from the restaurant, you come to the restaurant, you go home. And we've worked really, really hard to create this safe space for all of us to work in. So the thought of bringing guests into the restaurant for 50% less revenue, which we're already doing, and then, you know, possibly getting sick ourselves from somebody coming in and then having to shut down, it just doesn't feel like the smart decision for us. You know, in the past 48 hours, we've really started talking openly about what does this look like for a year, and being careful about talking about it because you have to keep morale up in the restaurant. You know, these five people who are coming in and working so hard, and, you know, being scared because what if they come in contact with somebody? So I don't know what that year looks like for us. You know, I don't know if that means we keep doing it this way or do we change our concept a little bit to better, you know, have better offerings for takeout or delivery, but that's kind of where we're shifting our thinking. I'm not really in the camp of, oh yeah, we'll open our doors and do 50% less and do plastic, you know, basically serve on to-go stuff. I'd rather just keep taking the stuff to the curb and doing contactless delivery until we have a better handle on this virus. And there is no handle on it right now.
I mean, it is hard to picture a lot of the stuff you just described that everybody is talking about in terms of what might be required. You know, the other thing which a friend of mine who is a chef owner said to me the other day is that, you know, if it's a mandated 50% capacity, you're not making 50% of your revenue. Because there's certain things, I'd love to know if you agree or disagree with this. The thing he said to me was, you know, if I turn my ice machine on, that's $600 a month. It doesn't matter how many people are coming in, you know, and there's all these things that have to do with the operation of the restaurant that are kind of fixed, you know, just to be in operation as a restaurant that has people coming into it. So it's the math doesn't work out the way a layperson might imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's obviously a huge part of it. And then, you know, if you have closed down, like luckily we've been going and have been utilizing, you know, product and bringing stuff in. So it's not like we would be starting, you know, restarting a whole entire restaurant, but that's another conversation I've had with other restaurateurs, what it would cost to what cash you need to get everything back up and going. And that means turning on the ice machine. That means bringing in a whole walk-in full of produce and meat and cheese, and possibly shutting down again because somebody gets sick or, you know, it gets out of hand again. So I think that to me is one of the biggest clouds. You spend all this money to get up and going and ginning and you get shut down again. And I've had a few friends that's happened to. They've been doing the takeout thing. One of their employees got sick. They have to shut down for 2 weeks. They reopen. Another employee gets sick and they shut down for 2 weeks. So, you know, I think that's absolutely correct. You're not guaranteed 50% less in revenue. It's probably going to be less than that.
I'm struck by how open you are and how well you're expressing, you know, these feelings you're having right now. You know, most of the people who listen to this show are chefs and cooks. Is there anything I haven't asked you might want to say to people who are listening, or is there anything I haven't asked you about the letter that you wrote?
No, I'm a very transparent person. it's a weird kitchen thing. I think it's ever since I opened the restaurant, you know, because we share tips, I've had to be honest constantly with everybody and all employees. And, but no, I think you asked all really great questions and, you know, I'm just starting to think about the future. So it's kind of getting my brain churning and my emotions going. But That's the next step. That's phase one, phase two, whatever's next.
All right. Well, listen, thank you. I know it's a rough time. Like I said before, we'd never even messaged. I don't think we were following each other before a few days ago. So thanks for being so responsive and thanks for making the time to call into the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it. And I look forward to the day that I get to feed you in my dining room.
Me too. And that's our show for today. Again, my great thanks to Caroline Glover for making the time to speak with me at this difficult moment. I really appreciated it. And Caroline, I do look forward, as we both said, to at some point visiting your restaurant. I should also mention that some of the themes of today's conversation will be picked up on tomorrow's show, when we will have a doubleheader. Jeff Gordonier of Esquire magazine, who of course wrote that wonderful piece at the end of last week that got so much attention, and Georgia-based chef Hugh Atchison. They will both be our guests tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to those conversations. I have not had them yet. I'm having them today, Tuesday, and I will share them with you all tomorrow. If you enjoyed this show, please explore our archives at andrewtalkstochefs.com or on your favorite podcast platform, and please tell your friends. Thanks to Wild Turkey Surprise for today's opening music and to After School Special for the music you are listening to right now. Please seek them out online and enjoy more of their music. Thanks to our engineer, Margaret Kelly, for mixing these special reports. Our thanks to Sam Pellegrino for making these special reports possible. And thank you to all of you for listening. Take care of yourselves, take a breath, and we will all get through this together. See you tomorrow.